Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Plant-Based Morning Show. I am Doug Hay. I'm joined today by Isabel.
Matt Frazier.
I'm Matt Frazier. Not Matt Frazier. No, Matt's off, I don't know, at a soccer game, maybe?
Gallivanting the world.
Playing a new sound machine. It's hard to know where Matt is, but he's not here. He did prep today's show notes, though, so I am grateful for that. We have a really good show. We're going to be talking about Slutty Vegan. We have some Slutty Vegan news. We have cafeterias, college cafeterias going vegan, people not wanting to look at the animals they're about to eat, plastic bags, and whether or not the impossible meat is actually vegan. So it's going to be a fun show. We're glad you're here. Garuda's here. Good morning, Garuda. Lady draws a lot. We'll let a few people trickle in before we get too deep into this. But Isabel, how have you been? Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah. It was nice and sunny after some snow here. So we got to spend lots of good time outside, which is always my favorite. I did yoga out on my deck, and it was the best decision that I made on Saturday was to do that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Because a couple of days ago or a week ago, you had like 3 feet of snow, right?
Yeah. So we finally shoveled it off. There was probably a foot left on the deck, and we finally shoveled it all off. And then it was beautiful and sunny. I live in Colorado, and when it's sunny out, snow goes away in like 2 seconds. So yeah, being able to be out after that was really nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I had the girls solo again last weekend, which we talked about on the Friday show a little bit. But yeah. We went roller skating. Super fun. I don't know. Have you ever been roller skating in like 30 years?
I was going to say, have I ever been? Yes. In the recent history, I think it's probably been maybe 5 years. I have a niece. And so I've gone roller skating with her, but it's been a long time, but that was my jam growing up. We did for everything. We went roller skating, and I, as an adult, you forget all about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's this old classic roller rink that, is not too far, you know, maybe like 20 minutes from our house that, it's like total nostalgia in there.
Oh yeah.
Same strobe lights and disco balls and music and, you know, like really bad, place to get food and concession stand and stuff. Even the skates are probably 30 years old, but it's really fun. It's really fun.
Yeah. That's a great choice too for entertaining the kiddos.
Yeah.
Good job, Daddy.
Thanks. All right, we got some more people trickling in here. Katie, Britters, welcome everyone. And any food news? I mean, I don't know. We're killing a little time here before the morning show, before we jump into the weather report.
Well, I don't know. I'm really excited about this this university one that we're going to be talking about, because I don't know if you know and or remember this, but I used to work in residence halls and worked with dining for a long time, for like 10 years. So this one hits home for me, and I'm really excited to talk about it.
All right. Well, should we just jump into it? Should we just jump right into the weather report?
I think so. Let's do this.
Don't have the sound machine, so you got to see. All right. First up, Slutty Vegan news. The vegan burger chain, backed by celebrities and spearheaded by Pinky Cole Hayes, has opened its doors to its 14th establishment in the heart of West Village, New York, on 7th Street, spanning across 1,870 square feet. It's going to be a big one. And what they are... The new location will have the same vibes as the Slutty Vegan stores, except we plan to shine light and celebrate the LGBTQIA+ communities and pride. And then one thing they call out is they're really serving breakfast, which is like their Atlanta Edgewood site. You haven't been to a Slutty Vegan, have you?
I have not, no. Sorry, everybody. I also have my little one who's hanging out with us today. I have not. And I'm really excited about the sounds of this new store. But have you been? I have.
Yeah. Been. Yeah. I went to one in Atlanta. It was great. It was really, you know, it was like, you know, greasy, sloppy vegan food, but it was awesome. And the vibe there was incredible. Everyone was just so happy to be there. And they appear to be happy to be serving me food. I have no idea how true that is, but I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
It gave the appearance of it.
Yeah. And I didn't realize they had 14 or 13 other locations. That's
yeah. I didn't either. I thought it was more of a like 2 to 3 chain, but that's really cool. Very exciting.
Yeah. All right. So, and now to the well-teased Sodexo news. Sodexo USA recently announced that it has massively expanded the use of default veg strategy, their default veg strategy in a university dining hall, in university dining halls. This strategy, which was first piloted by Sodexo in collaboration with Better Food Foundation and the Food for Climate League in university canteens with all-you-can-eat offerings, uses behavioral incentives to encourage plant-based dietary change. Basically, mm-hmm. what's happening here is that they're defaulting veg, and then you can add in the meat or you can add in non-vegan options. But I gotta say, this is like, I think that this is how more people will eat plant-based foods, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's an easy, especially in the, like the college and university setting, it's an easy in, like when you're in a dining hall with all of these different food options and just to like, to have the dedicated section is like, that's huge because then at least people will like go and look at it instead of it being like special preferences section over here. It's really exciting that they're doing this.
Yeah, I think it's great. And what is, I don't know. I mean, because right, it's not going to piss anybody or like piss as many people off if it had gone fully veg or something like that. You know, having the meat options, of course, allows people to choose what they want, but the default's veg. There was lots of news out of the New York City hospitals last year or 2 years ago, maybe they went default veg. So when you ordered your food or whatever, the first option to pop up or like the first available option was a plant-based meal, and they found that it completely changed behavior in what people were ordering because those meals were always there. You could always get the vegan option, but no one was doing it. And then a lot of people chose that just because, you know, it was presented in a way that made it feel like the better option. So I think this is a really good move for anyone who is trying to encourage more plant-based foods without going fully plant-based to do something like this.
Yeah. Again, like college and university age students, traditionally 18 to 22, like that's a pretty formative time in life to be able to start exploring things that maybe you've never explored before. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So a little bit more on this. Separate from the pilot program produced by Food Climate League and Better Food Foundation, suggests even greater potential benefits in institutions that consistently follow the strategy. In this report, it was calculated that the two universities that most consistently implemented plant-based meal strategy during the pilot program saw a staggering 150% increase in plant-based meal choices, resulting in up to 81.5% of students choosing plant-based meals. And then also a 23.6% decrease in greenhouse gas emissions attributed to catering in the three schools. And the concept is now firmly integrated into menus of Sodexo canteens in almost 400 universities and colleges across the United States. There you go.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Next up, for the April 2024 cover story of Vanity Fair, the actress spoke to with reporter Julie Miller.
Anne Hathaway.
Okay, here we go. Anne Hathaway spoke to reporter Julie Miller at a plant-based restaurant, prompting her to hilariously admit something about herself. And this is from people.com, so I don't know how hilarious it actually is, but here we go. The quote is, "I think everybody can agree I have a personality of a vegan," as she quipped over eating green chickpea hummus and honey nut squash.
Sounds good. Yummy.
Do you think Anne Hathaway has the personality of a vegan?
I don't really know what that's supposed to mean exactly.
I know. But it turns out she's not vegan. She just likes vegetables. She hasn't given up meat, although she does love vegetables. Though she does love vegetables. "I die over beets," says Vanity Fair. But other than the past 5 years, she has given up alcohol. Okay. All right. So this is not really a vegan story.
They're just throwing it in there for people to take a look at. Mm-hmm. Buzzword, everybody.
Yeah. You know, I think it's funny when people are like trying to relate with a vegan because they like vegetables. I mean, unless you're a carnivore, like who doesn't like at least some sort of vegetable?
Yeah. Who doesn't like beets? Beets are delicious. Beets actually are kind of a special taste, but beets are delicious.
I mean, they're so good. Roasted beets, I can eat that all day.
Pickled beets?
Pickled beets?
But it is, just like you said, like it's, oh, I like vegetables. It's like, oh, you're vegan? Oh, I like vegetables too. Cool.
Yeah. All right, let's see here. On to the next one. People who eat meat prefer not to see animals. Wow, this is breaking news here.
Shocker.
Actually, I think it is. I think it's important news to talk about here. People who eat meat prefer not to see animals they are eating on product labels. A new study by the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, AHDB, has found. In the study, nearly two-thirds of meat eaters found food imagery more appealing for pork products than pictures of pigs. So I guess that's like pictures of bacon or whatever it is you're eating instead of an actual pig. The AHDB is part of the UK government Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. And earlier this year, campaigners accused the body of misleading customers with its pro-meat adverts in supermarkets. The AHDB says that volume growth in the fresh red meat has been challenging for many years. Indeed, the total number of pigs slaughtered for meat in the United Kingdom fell to 10 million in 2023, the lowest number since 2013. Wow. So, I mean, the news here is that people don't want to see the animal that they're about to eat on the label, which is unsurprising. But what is important for our motivations, our motives, is to just, you know, make sure that people understand, or I don't know, not hide from the fact that people are eating animals, right? And they don't have to see the slaughter, right? They don't have to see all the gruesome, what's actually happening back there. But just reminding someone that, like, that's an animal. I mean, I'm not going to go around telling people, like, oh, how's that how you're eating? You know, but like,
yeah.
But that is powerful in ads or in stuff that we do, whatever, you know, showing that it really is an animal and not just a slab of meat.
Yeah, I do think it's really interesting to think about, the impact that has, like the psychology of, oh, I'm eating this thing versus like, oh, I like see the animal that I am eating. That is a big difference. I wonder if if they printed more animals on food packages, like would that actually deter people more? Not saying that's a good idea, but I do think it's interesting. It's an interesting study that they did. Makes sense, but what they could do with it.
I've always been struck by how many like barbecue places have a cartoon pig in their logo, or like Chick-fil-A, you know, uses the cartoon cow. It's like eat more chicken.
Yeah.
Just like a lot. It blows my mind how many restaurants kind of lean into the fact that like the animal that you're about to eat. I don't know. I mean, I guess I wonder how it works for Chick-fil-A when they're talking about a cow instead of a chicken.
And it's not chicken. That is interesting. I wonder what kind of research Chick-fil-A has done. We should find out.
Yeah. I don't know. All right, now shifting away from plant-based foods, but into popular plastic sandwich bags. A new analysis of the most popular plastic sandwich bags found that the vast majority contained toxic PFSAs, also known as forever chemicals. The analysis, which was commissioned by the Momovation blog, interesting, and carried out by the EPA certified lab, found that 9 out of 11, 81% of the most popular sandwich bags showed high levels of PFSAs. Should you say it? PFSAs?
I don't think so.
PFAS?
Mark. Ah, there you go.
That sounds right. And while the USDA allows for much higher levels of individual PFAS in plastic packaging than those found in the new analysis, the EDF told The Guardian that the FDA is still basing regulations on outdated science. So you're not here with us, but plastic, you know, forever chemicals in your plastic sandwich bags that you're probably putting, a lot of people are putting their kids' sandwiches in, lots of little snacks. You know, we have sandwich bags. We use plastic sandwich bags. I use them a lot for running, actually. It's like, if I'm going to be putting pretzels or something in my running bag, I don't want to carry a big silicone plastic sandwich bag that we use for the kids' lunches. We have the silicone bags. Maybe you've seen them.
Yep. They're great.
But they're not great for like stuffing into a running bag. So I often use the plastic the plastic ones and either just rinse them or sometimes throw them out. And I don't know. Does this freak you out? Does forever chemicals freak you out?
I will say, yeah, it does. I'm not a big fan of plastic bags in general. Like I always want to look for the like multi-use. And then I am that person that washes out the bags every time I use them so that I can use them multiple times. So yeah, this does kind of freak me out. Like what happens when I'm washing these? But this kind of study is one that I'm like, okay, now I want to go look at what brands don't have that.
Yeah.
Because I use the silicone baggies. I use containers almost all of the time instead, but I do exactly like you're talking about. I use either baggies or sometimes even plastic wrap, which I don't like that I use, but I do. Mm-hmm. Use plastic wrap sometimes to like put snackies in for running too. So that is a solution I need too.
Yeah. I mean, they're convenient. No doubt about it. Garuda says get glassware. And of course, like we use glass silverware all the time, but
you can't really take that on the trail. Like,
a giant glass Tupperware around. Those silicone bags. I have no idea, honestly, if they're any better. Like there might be forever chemicals in those too.
That's true. Like, I don't know either.
Better for the environment, I assume. In my head, they are because they're reusable, but who knows what it takes to produce them. But they're not going in the landfill.
Yeah, that's the next thing that we need to create, Doug. You and me will create some sort of runner solution.
Yeah, there you go.
Who knows?
I like it. All right, that's your weather report, everyone. Thanks for being here. Britter says Chick-fil-A just announced they are going to start using chicken with antibiotics again. Interesting. I wonder what that's about. And then Rivercat says that she saw that. I guess their audience doesn't really care. I would imagine that's probably true.
Probably true.
And then Gruda says Chick-fil-A is my jam. There you go, Gruda. All right. So our big main article of the day is about Impossible Burgers and whether we test or whether Impossible Burgers being tested on animals, and does that make them vegan or not? Are they no longer vegan?
Yikes.
So here we go. All right. This is an article from Plant-Based News titled, Is the Impossible Burger Vegan? The Debate Explained. So I think that like I saw a couple reels about this last week. So I don't know if this is just breaking news or like that they tested some stuff on animals or not, but it seems to be picking up some steam here. The gist is that Impossible Foods, which of course is the producer of Impossible Meats and also Impossible Chicken and all kinds of impossible things, that all right, let's see if I can find it here.
That they tested on mice.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, the very, very limit to what they had to do essentially for FDA approval is what is how I read it, is what they did in order to gain the FDA's approval.
That's right. Here we go. In order to gain full approval from the US FDA and to be generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, they had to test on mice. They had to test their what is it, heme protein, something?
Yeah, their special heme protein.
So does that make them not vegan? And talks about what does it mean to actually be vegan. By definition, vegans avoid all products that cause or are derived from animal exploitation. This includes milk, dairy, eggs, along with meat and any other animal-derived ingredients. But this ethos also extends to textiles like leather and any other products that have been tested on animals, from cosmetics to food ingredients like Impossible's heme. I don't know. What's your take? What's your take, Isabel? Does this mean Impossible Burgers are actually not vegan?
Sorry, everybody. Little guy is coming to join us. This is a really difficult one, I think. I think it obviously, it depends on your definition of vegan. Like they obviously give a definition, but I think there's lots of different ways that people, define this word. I don't know. I think it might mean that it's not vegan because of the connection to animal testing. It's plant-based, certainly still, but I think the like real hardcore vegans would say, well, because they did this animal testing. But I thought it was really interesting that, and I don't know what the US FDA's requirements are. But I found it really interesting that like that was a portion of their testing was that they had to do this testing on animals, which that brings up a whole nother question in of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. And I mean, you can't fault a company if that's their only way to go to mass market. Like, is it better for them to test on the minimum? They said they tested on the minimum required of mice. Is it better to do that one time? And they haven't done it since. Just so they can bring plant-based meat to market, which I'm sure has saved more animals than been tested on. You know, is that better, or is it better to just not have anything that is going to be required to be tested? I would say that it's better for them to bring it to market, and you got to do what you got to do within reason, of course, to be able to do that. But I understand also that, you know, people might not agree with that, and that's fine. It says, keep in mind, this is quoting now Plant-Based News. It's worth bearing in mind, however, that the definition of veganism is avoiding animal exploitation, quote, as far as possible and practical. Many ingredients we eat have impacted animals in some way, and avoiding them is extremely rare. Everything from life-saving medicines to diapers to contact lenses may be implicated in animal testing. And that's right. I mean, I'm sure that there are so many things I use and touch and wear every single day can be linked back to some sort of animal testing. And it'd be impossible, I think. You know, I mean, I'm sure that there are people who do it, you know, so I guess I can't say impossible, but it would be very impractical, I think, for me at this phase of my life to fully remove any sort of animal testing, anything that's been animal testing from my life, tested from my life. That said, yeah. if I like shampoo, you know, or some sort of cosmetics or something like that, if I know that there's an option that hasn't been animal tested, of course I'm going to choose that one. But
yeah,
I don't know. What do you think?
No, I agree with you 100%. Like I just like looking around my house, I'm like, did I make sure that every single thing in here, you know, had no connection to animal testing? The answer is no. Like that is not that. I didn't go that deep. That, as you said, there are people that do, and like that's fantastic. I love that. I'm really glad that there are those people in the world. But I also think it's really great that Impossible has been upfront about this. Again, I don't know if it's breaking news, like they're just telling the world now, or if they've always been open about it. But you know, I think it's important that they have never called their product vegan. Like that's not a word that they've used on it. It's always been a plant-based meat or plant-based protein. So I don't think that they've claimed to be anything that they're not. And I agree. Like I think they did it in probably the most sustainable way and ethical way that they could. And I'm a proponent of Impossible. So I believe that what they're saying. But I agree with you that like, would it have been better if they had never done this and never brought it to market? No, I don't think so. Because I think it's expanding the minds of, you know, people who are plant curious and who try it out. And that's better in my mind than, you know, not having that in the world.
If Beyond didn't you do animal testing? And I have no idea. The fact that we're not talking about it here in this article, I think that they didn't. They might not have their own. They might not.
They don't have that. They don't have the heme protein. That's like Impossible's thing.
So does that change your mind? Like, would you now choose Beyond, like in a store instead of Impossible, if you have the option?
That's a really good question.
Not important to you, though.
I don't know. I've talked about this before, but I use the plant-based meats kind of pretty sparingly in our diet. Like they're not the thing that I reach for first. But I don't know. I think I probably would. Like if I had the choice, if it was the same price, same thing that I was looking for, I personally would choose Beyond over.
Yeah, I think I would
knowing this. Yeah. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. I think I would too. And you know, the other thing that this article calls out is that they've never, and you mentioned this too, they've never called themselves vegan. They always refer to themselves as plant-based, which is true. And fits here, of course, you know, the definition of vegan and would, you know, might piss people off even more if they did use the term vegan. But I gotta say, I gotta assume that that was more of a marketing decision to avoid vegan and being associated as like a vegan meat than any concern around the animal testing. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think probably too. But I still like the fact that they haven't claimed to be vegan. I do think that's still helpful in my mind, at least. Maybe not for other people, but I think so.
So Gruder here says that they have been open about testing on mice from the beginning, and they said that they would have not done it if they could have avoided it. Yeah, they said that in this article as well. And Kate says, I would guess that a lot of people don't even realize testing was required, including myself. I didn't. This was new.
I didn't know that
when I first heard about this just a couple days ago. Interesting. Very interesting. I'm curious if this would change anyone who's watching buyer behavior at all.
Yeah, I would love to know as well what the people think. Because I had never considered it either until you asked me the question, Doug, of would it change my behavior? And I think so. But I don't think it's printed on the packaging anywhere. Maybe it is where it says like, I don't know. I need to look at the packaging. Yeah, test it on animals.
I don't know why you would advertise that.
Because if it's FDA, I don't know if they have to. I'm going to look now next time I'm
interested. All right. Mm-hmm. I think I have some Impossible chicken in my freezer.
Take a look for us, Doug.
All right. So we got some extra time here. So I think we move on to one additional article. This one from Veg News. And the title is How Netflix is Driving the Plant-Based Shift, a Timeline. And over the past decade, Netflix has hosted a number of impactful films and series that have changed the way many of us think, eat, and behave. And that is, just incredibly true. There are some documentaries that came from Netflix, that became popular on Netflix, that really have impacted the conversation around food and a plant-based diet. There were times when it was, you would hear a lot of people talking about like, how did you see Forks Over Knives? Did you see that movie? And they were not connected to the plant-based diet at all, but watched the movie and that probably had a lasting impact. What's interesting is that we get further down this timeline, I think the impact is smaller and smaller. And I'm not sure if that's just because the films weren't as good or, as impactful themselves, or if people are just kind of over the, they've watched Forks Over Knives 6 years ago and now are no longer interested in the conversation. But so if you go through the timeline here, it starts in 2013, Blackfish exposes SeaWorld, causing profits to plummet. I never watched this movie. Did you watch Blackfish?
Yeah, it was. I feel like it was like groundbreaking at the point in time when it came out. And it is. It was fascinating. And I do think this was kind of like the start of these bigger hitting movies that Netflix started or documentaries that Netflix started hosting.
Yeah. Yeah. According to this Veg News article, as a result of the film's release, SeaWorld's stock prices plummeted, ticket sales fell, and major travel companies pulled their partnerships with the theme park.
Yeah.
But 18 orcas still remain in SeaWorld's parks. But they announced an end to the orca breeding program in 2015. That's something.
Making change. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then, moving on to the timeline, 2015, Cowspiracy showcases the shocking truths about animal agriculture's environmental impact. This one started a lot of conversations. I think, I don't know how many people had actually converted to, eating to a plant-based diet or maybe even caused them to eat less meat. I think that it got people thinking about or associating animal products and meat in general with harming the environment.
Mm-hmm. I think there's been a couple of these though over probably the last, I don't know, like 15, 20 years. It's like, I feel like every couple of years, there's like one big documentary about like animal farming or, these environments that we're raising animals in. But again, it's cyclical. Like it's like really exciting and like shocking. And I feel like makes people think about their behavior and then it kind of dwindles off. And then we have another one that happens.
Yeah, right.
It's interesting.
So, yeah, and so that was 2015. The next year, very next year, Forks Over Knives discloses the link between diet and disease. And I think this one probably was the first to break through in a huge way. And I might be wrong about that, but in with associating plant-based diet, especially a whole food plant-based diet, with longevity and the health impact. So this article goes on to say, Forks Over Knives introduced the general public to the idea that food wasn't just some modest force. It was going to bring your cholesterol down a little bit or something like that. It wasn't going to bring your cholesterol down a little bit or something like that. It was something revolutionary that could empower you to change your life dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. I think that Forks Over Knives had a really big impact on people.
I think so too. And I think maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I feel like it's what it almost turned it mainstream to be able to talk about plant-based diets and veganism, I think. Yeah. And Netflix is incredible for their choice of these different documentaries. And I feel like it really has been, I said the cyclical nature already, but the impact that Netflix has been able to have with releasing some of these pieces, is really cool that that's something that they are supporting too.
Yeah. EXINEX on YouTube says, Netflix got me interested in a plant-based diet 13 years ago with a documentary, and it was Forks Over Knives. So there you go. And Gruta says, the issue with these documentaries is they always get debunked. This is why these documentaries are not good for veganism, when people find out that it's propaganda, especially when it comes to health. See, I completely disagree with you here, Gruta. Of course, like every documentary, there are things that get sensationalized, and that's just seems to be across the board around every single documentary, because they do have a motive, right? There's some sort of story they're trying to tell, and they're trying to sensationalize things. I think that they are not bad for the vegan movement at all. They do give some fodder sometimes to the opposition, but I think it's these have caused way more positive impact than harm. Let's run the rest of these pretty quickly. 2017, What the Health inspires a new wave of vegans. This was just a year after Forks Over Knives, and I don't know if it inspired a new wave, but it kind of continued to drive home the message of a plant-based diet and health. And this says, celebrities who tweeted about the film include Neo, Moby, Shay Mitchell, and even Lewis Hamilton.
Very cool. Go. Yeah.
All right. Also in 2017, Okja, OKJA.
I haven't even heard of this. I'm very interested in it now.
Yeah. And broke hearts everywhere. Google searches for vegans surged. And this follows the story of a young girl named Mija and a super pig named Okja. A super pig. I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
It draws comparisons with the real life meat industry, follows Mija as she fights for Okja to be returned home after he is taken by a giant corporation for the meat industry. Very interesting. Then moving on to 2019, so 2 years later, The Game Changers proves that meat isn't essential for muscle. And I think that this one is similar to some of the other health ones, and maybe Cowspiracy. It did something totally new for associating vegans with athleticism. And I know for a fact that there are two of my friends who have remained vegan because of this film. And that was kind of what pushed them over the edge. So I think The Game Changers was, we're in the plant-based athlete space, of course. Noe Athlete was thriving in 2019. Of course that kind of maybe impacts us a little differently, but I thought it was a big one for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. And I wish there was more exposure to The Game Changers. I think there was a huge amount, but it's still such an important story that I think needs to continue to be told.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then 2021, Seaspiracy. I never actually watched this one. This was
I didn't
by the Cowspiracy people. lifts the veil on industrialized fishing industry. Brands make big changes. Okay, that's cool. You know, I didn't hear all that many people talking about this one in the same way as the other ones, but if it got some brands to change their practices, that's awesome. And then you have a pretty big gap here, or I guess just two more years, but last year was a big one with Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones. This one, you know, was not a vegan documentary, right? It was about the Blue Zones and Dan Buettner and his work. And diet is just a part of that, of course. I think the people, this was another good one, I would say, because it wasn't just about diet and nutrition. And so people kind of hear that as part of a bigger picture thing for longevity and living longer.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a more relatable, you're able to apply it to yourself when you see people doing things that don't feel so extreme.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, you know, the Blue Zones philosophy and his pillars, are not that radical, right? I mean, it's not like, I mean, I think his cookbooks are plant-based and Dan Buettner might be plant-based, but, it's not, you have to go 100% plant-based. It's not, you have to stop drinking all alcohol. It's not that you have to be at the gym for 5 hours a day. Like, they're not that radical and they're relatable. And I think that's what's made it so popular.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
And then finally in 2023, oh no, two more here. Chicken Run, The Dawn of the Nugget. We talked about this one, about how, this was a kid's movie with a pro vegan agenda. Because it exposed the factory farms for chicken factory farms and how it felt like a big one, but I don't know that it actually made much of a splash in changing people's perception of chicken nuggets. But maybe it's kind of just like indoctrinating kids a little bit here and there. I'm okay with it. I actually haven't seen it.
Maybe,
watch it with my kids. Finally, You Are What You Eat. The twin experiment, you know, Matt and I have talked a lot about this one. We like the experiment a lot. We like, of course, the results a lot. We have some issues with the way the film portrayed a plant-based diet and the motives behind the film. And that kind of, I think, clouded a lot of the positive things that could have come from this film. Or this mini series, I guess. And, you know, people watched it. I heard several people kind of mention it to me offhand, which is great. But, I kind of wish they had toned down the agenda a little bit. I think it would have been more impactful to actually just look at the results and instead of kind of trying to push something. But I don't know. That was my take. Did you watch it?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it, but now I want to, because I know I'm interested in the studies that they're doing. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
All right, let's see. We got a couple comments here. Lady Draws a Lot says Seaspiracy is a must see. All right.
Gotta check it out then.
Mm-hmm. Big Meaty X Claws. His documentaries were, let's see, Game Changers, You Are What You Eat, How to Live to Be 100, did it for me this year. Yep.
Yep. Awesome.
And then Gruta's still pushing the propaganda. No. And you're right, Gruta, Blue Zone diets. I don't know if they're all non-vegan. I thought that...
I think there's a couple that are vegan.
The one here, Loma Linda, I believe that one's vegan. But the other ones are not. And that's, you know, but there's, you know, there's no hiding that. No one is claiming that they are. All right, so that is it for the show. Matt O'Connor says he highly recommends the Blue Zones documentary. Very well done. Agree there. That's it for the show. Thanks, Isabel, for filling in for Matt. Matt will be back tomorrow. But you will be back on Friday. So
yes, indeed.
Maybe I had a kid here last Friday for the episode. Maybe this Friday there'll be a kid-free episode. Thanks, everybody.
let's certainly hope so. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.